one of my colleagues and also thank the other funders today, the directors of CTSI. The idea of the study was based on the fact that neither randomized clinical trial data nor observational studies are ideal source of information for cost-effectiveness evaluations. In randomized clinical trials, the patient usually self-selects in the study, and that creates various kind of biases when we try to evaluate how representative their disease progression paths or their treatment effects for the general population. In addition, in clinical trial settings, people usually get high quality of care, they receive more utilization, and may receive a treatment that's typically not available for a population outside of the study. On the other hand, the observational studies may also not give us unbiased information because people are not randomized to treatment, so they may decide to choose or not choose treatment for other personal or economic reasons. So we wanted to take advantage of both sources of information, clinical trials and observational data sets, and create more efficient and less biased evaluations of disease progression paths, in this case, for patients with multiple sclerosis. For those of you who are not familiar with this condition, I'll explain the main features of the disease, which are important for developing disease progression paths. First of all, it's an autoimmune neurologic condition that leads to a great disability in younger populations. And because of that, people may lose employment or switch to a low-paid job, and the economic burden of this illness is primarily due to income losses rather than medical expenses. So this slide describes the path of multiple sclerosis disease progression. Most of the people in the clinical phase don't know they have a disease. So if they get diagnosed, then they start developing relapses, the acute short-term periods of function loss, and it could be a vision, sensitivity, any kind of other kind of function. However, once they relapse and a person usually regains function and go back to the original ability. As disease progresses, relapses become more frequent and recovery becomes more incomplete until disease moves into the progressive phase with no more relapses but continuous growth and disability. In addition, I want to emphasize that this is chronic illness with no cure, so once somebody diagnosed with MS, they're going to have MS until the time of death. The peak incidence is around age 30, so you can imagine that an average person will live 30 to 40 years with the illness, so modeling accurately disease progression becomes very important. Women are also much more likely to be diagnosed with MS, and current data demonstrate that women may actually have a different disease trajectory, so being able to model disease progression by gender also becomes critical. And even though it's a relatively chronic neurologic disease, on a large scale of things, it's a relatively uncommon illness, so typically using national surveys or any kind of other data sets that are readily available for other illnesses is not very efficient because we will end up with a very small sample. Like Medicare current beneficiary survey, for example, will end up with a sample of about 100 MS patients a year, which is not enough to generate accurate estimates. So we have to use either MS-specific surveys or collect original data. So for this study, we ended up using Soyuz Litho Longitudinal MS Survey, which is an ongoing survey of U.S. sample of MS patients. The survey is conducted by Hatch Associates from Boston, and they were able to recruit a representative sample of about 2,000 patients with multiple sclerosis from all over the country. And on this population, they collect information on type of MS, progression of MS, treatment that people receive, and also health services utilization. For this study, we limited our sample to 900 people with relapsing disease, and this is the kind of disease for which the disease-modifying therapy that we were trying to evaluate the cost effectiveness analysis indicated. We excluded people who only had one interview because we were interested in longitudinal progression, and we excluded people who had recently had four-year. Disability in multiple sclerosis is typically assessed using Extended Disease Status Scale, EDSS. This scale is done in conjunction with neurologist assessment of disability variant function, and primarily the score is affected by person's ability to walk. However, because Sonia Slivka's study was made in survey, we did not have an opportunity to evaluate everybody using a specialist. So people had to report their MS status using disability status scale. Fortunately, there were successful studies that matched disability status scale to EDSS, and that was our measure of disability, because disability-based disease state was the framework, the backbone of our disability progression model. We used first-order Markov model with annual cycles, and we estimated transfusion probabilities and rate of relapses using multinomial logistic regressions. Now, the most interesting part was how can we estimate treatment effects in the population that chose to either get treated with four different treatment options, or some patients refused treatment for a very long time, and that wasn't at random. So the idea was that if we only estimate untreated disease progression using patients who decided not to get treated, our estimates are likely to be biased. So the approach for this study was using the estimates of drug effectiveness reported by a pivotal clinical trial to subtract the treatment effect, and then by doing that, we can estimate untreated disease progression for everybody in the sample, whether they get treatment or not. Using Monte Carlo simulation, we estimated 10-year disease progression paths for people who were treated and not treated. So here is a scheme that describes the algorithm for estimating disease progression paths for treated and untreated individuals. Commonly, pivotal clinical trials will report treatment effects as a risk ratio. However, to calculate transfusion probabilities and to distinguish probability of progression for treated and untreated patients, we needed a measure of treatment that is a multiplicative factor rather than a risk ratio. So the idea was translate the risk factor into a multiplicative treatment effect. And this is how we did that. First, we estimated probabilities as a function of covariates, such as prior disease state, disease duration, recent relapse rate, and patient demographics. As you can see, there is no treatment effect in the first equation. Then we set up a multiplicative treatment effect to be equal to the risk ratio. This is the initial treatment effect. And we estimated the transfusion probabilities using the coefficients from the first equation and the new treatment effect. Then, for our total cohort, we calculated risk ratios for people who treated and if they would be untreated, and compared that new risk ratio to the ratio that was reported by clinical trials. If they were reasonably close, we will take that new risk ratio and treatment effects and go on to calculate 10-year disease progression paths using Monte Carlo simulation. If the estimate wasn't within the proximity that we wanted it to be, we will continue this iterative process, adjusting the new treatment factor and getting it closer and closer to what we wanted it to do. So, here are the results of the estimation. This is a transfusion probability matrix. We have five disease states. So you can, at any given year, which is a cycle in this model, you can transition from any state to any other state. Well, some probabilities are very small. There is not an improbable event. So the main finding was that if we only estimate transfusion probabilities using untreated patients, their estimates of disease progressions will be lower than the estimates obtained on the total cohort. That suggests that people who choose to not get treatment typically have slower progressing disease, and they probably have a very different trajectory of the disease over time. In addition, because using the entire cohort allows us to deal with a larger sample size, our confidence intervals using the sample was very thin on the margins. We had very few patients with early disease, because people only get it diagnosed. And very few people with late disease, because by the time people become disabled, they're really not interested in participating in any studies. However, it's important to incorporate the entire spectrum of disability in any evaluations to have an accurate estimate. In general, the cohort of people who were enrolled in this survey were representative of patients with multiple sclerosis that were included in other national studies. So there is no any serious bias why people got involved in this study. The main criticism of the measure of disability in MS in general is the use of EDSS because it's so severely linked to ability to walk, but doesn't take into account many other aspects of disability, such as mental health issues, sensory issues, and other problems that patients may experience. And in addition, any study that uses randomized clinical trials are only as good as the data in randomized clinical trials. So if the study wasn't representative or was too short, these are all the problems that we can encounter as well. So in conclusion, I would like to emphasize that using patients in the populations who treated are untreated can clearly lead to a very serious bias in our estimates of the entire population, because treated patients, in particular multiple sclerosis, tend to have a very different type of disease than patients who decide to stay untreated. They have a slower, according to our estimates, they have milder and slower progressive forms of MS. And correcting for this treatment effect and incorporating more inclusive sample rather than a smaller